And good evening, Cuse Nation, and welcome to the Upstate Orange Podcast on FingerLakes1.tv and YouTube. We're coming at you live from inside the FingerLakes1.com studios in downtown Seneca Falls, New York. It's Sunday, December 7th, 2014, and tonight we'll be talking about two Syracuse losses this week and the state of the Orange. I'm Jim Sinacropi, and my co-host Matt Verkey, along with the mouth from the South, Dave Barnick, are standing by in studio. The professor, Brad Connor, has a week off. The Upstate Orange Podcast is brought to you by Generations Bank with locations in Auburn, Farmington, Geneva, Phelps, Seneca Falls, Union Springs, and Waterloo. Be sure to check out their mobile banking app or visit them online at mygenbank.com. And by Madej, Miris, and Ricky, your hometown personal injury attorneys. If you've been injured and deserve compensation, call the Finger Lakes Personal Injury Hotline at 315-568-0911. That's 315-568-0911. Or visit their website at MadejMirisRicky.com. Well, fellas, welcome up in the studio, Verk.
What's going on tonight?
And Dave, glad to have you up here for a while. You've kind of been on summer hiatus, but we've got you ready to call some high school basketball games, and tonight you're coming up here to talk some Syracuse hoops.
Always good to see you guys.
You were in the Dome yesterday for that thrilling game.
It was a great game, great crowd, bad ending.
Yeah, really bad. Similar to Michigan.
Yep.
But we'll talk about both those games. Syracuse's 68-65 loss to Michigan last Tuesday, and Saturday's 69-57 loss to our old Big East Conference mate, St. John's, in the Dome. Some great Orange trivia, too, coming your way. Even though Brad's not here, don't think I'm not bringing some trivia to the table tonight. Let's get to it with our Big Five questions. Question number one, three losses before December 7th. How does Boeheim rate the ship, Dave?
Well, he just has to hope they don't have any more bad losses, and he keeps teaching these kids and bringing these freshmen along. There's some work to be done. I don't know what the answers are exactly, except it's pretty easy to say they don't have enough talent on this team to go 10 for 20 from the foul line and win games, or 3 from 22 from the arc, but... it's going to take time for the point guard, Joseph, to get anywhere near where Ennis was last year. Those guys, those freshmen, don't come along that often.
Yeah, a lot of people were thinking, Joseph would just step in, including myself, and things would continue on as they have, but that's not necessarily the case, Verk. What would you, what does Boeheim need to do to get things back in gear?
I don't know if there's a whole lot, and I kind of agree with what Coach Boeheim has said in his press conferences. They need to make shots, bottom line. They're getting open, pretty good looks. Patterson had some nice looks. Cooney had some, they're just not making shots. And it's kind of the same thing as last year where they're not scoring enough points. This year's team is not as good defensively, obviously, as they were last year. I wouldn't mind seeing him press a little bit, I guess. He hasn't done that the past couple of years as much as he was in years prior, I didn't think. And maybe the more you get the game going a little bit more up tempo. They have such trouble in a half court offense, but yet they don't score a lot in transition either. So it's kinda, they're at a standstill almost.
Yeah, and a lot of that might be the product of the 2-3 zone. But this particular team so far has not played the 2-3 zone that well, outside of maybe Christmas in the middle. The Joseph and Cooney are just not getting out on shooters, and it's a little upsetting to see. So that in itself,
and McCullough, I think he left McCullough's the guys open bad, in the corners a couple times.
I was wondering, I couldn't remember who was responsible for those open threes.
They're all on his side yesterday.
And they were open, and they passed it around and found them. And, boy, once, but three of the last 11 points scored by the same guy, Green.
Yep.
Yeah, and that one, the one big one, I think, was Jordan hit one, too, and they were on McCullough's side. And, hopefully not shades of Dante Green defensively for McCullough.
He's a great shot blocker.
He's a great player altogether,
you know,
yeah.
You know, he's good.
So let's move ahead to question number two, which is our sophomore class is just kind of like non-existent, really. BJ played a little bit yesterday against St. John's, hardly any against Michigan. Patterson, same deal. Patterson actually played quite a bit at the end when Joseph was benched. Roberson's got the injury. Aboko not seeing much time. But I think that these guys got to step up and start contributing in a bigger way if we're going to do anything. And, you know, they're in Boeheim's system, which means that, you know, they could see 25 minutes one night and zero the next. And that's probably hard on them. But I want somebody, please, step up and act like you're not still a freshman.
Yeah, they're going to need those guys. You know, with all the early departures you have, and then you got these three guys in the sophomore class who you're getting nothing from. You know, obviously Ennis goes pro, and you got these three other guys who we expected something from them last year and got nothing. And outside of Ennis, obviously, in that class, and Ennis goes pro. Now, yeah, like you said, between Johnson, Patterson, Aboko,
and Roberson.
Roberson, they've all really, really been bad. You know, like Patterson comes in, he hits the 1-3, you're like, all right, here he goes. And then he misses, you know, four wide open threes in a row.
Yep.
You know, Roberson's just been terrible in my mind for the most part. I know, you know, maybe he's just been injured, but he's done nothing. And, you know, we had high hopes for B.J. Johnson. And, you know, he you know, down in the garden, he got in there and jacked up some shots that Coach Boeheim didn't like. He doesn't play the next game. You know, he's an athletic kid. He supposedly is a good shooter. But they haven't given him anything.
And Christmas is playing his guts out.
Sure.
And he avoided foul trouble last night, but he was gassed a couple of different times. And if he can't get some inside help from one or more of those guys.
And I think I don't see why Aboko can't get in there and, you know, give you 4 or 5 minutes. From what I've seen, he's pretty capable, even offensively. You know, not going to create his own shot, but he's going to be able to make the shot in front of him when he has to, you know, make a layup, which a lot of big guys, you know, can't seem to do. But, yeah, had high hopes for Patterson. I think early on in the podcast, Virk, we were talking Patterson as being the guy. And he gets there, but he doesn't take the next step. He made a nice alley-oop pass, too.
Yeah.
A nice no-look alley-oop to McCullough against St. John's.
And the thing, if I'm Ron Patterson, I'm thinking that door for me to get more playing time is wide open because, you know, Cooney had 2 points yesterday. And if he can make some shots, he'd be getting 20, 25 minutes a game. But he can't make a shot.
And that's the thing a lot of people are saying. I talked to a friend today. When are they going to get Cooney out of there? Well, apparently, who's going to fill that role? Who can step up?
I'm not a big Cooney fan either, but he's the best they got right now, which is unfortunate.
Patterson 1-for-7 yesterday from 3, 2-for-9 from the field,
and he gets good looks. You know, their big guys are both, you know, they creating decent looks for him. Cooney struggled to get some decent looks, but. You know, when you get open, you got to knock those shots down. You know, I watch all these other Division I teams playing, and they got 7 or 8 guys, it seems like. Everybody comes off the bench, they're hitting threes.
High school kids this weekend bury threes. One kid made 7, another kid made 5, and, you know, it's the same distance. Actually, it might be a few inches shorter, but you get my drift on, and I agree with the work. You know, this is D1 guys on scholarship at Syracuse. We get our pick of the litter for the most part. We don't got guys that can make a 3-point shot. Which isn't even a long jump shot, you know, anymore. It's not like it's an NBA 3.
I know at one point we were shooting in the low 20s as a team from the 3-point line, and that's unheard
Nobody
of.
Nobody.
I think the
that,
worst.
Man.
I think I saw a stat the worst they ever shot was in the low 30s. So they're 10 percentage points below that.
Well, you get talking. I was at the Holy Cross game. I mean, the final score was fairly lopsided, but again, the outside shooting
still,
was horrendous, and the you know you get talking, you get thinking. You know, Boeheim's great at recruiting great athletes. But
yeah.
We start thinking about how many great shooters have they had. You hope some develop.
You go back to McNamara. I mean, even Sutherland, probably one of our best shooters in recent history, very streaky, go weeks without making, you know, more than one shot.
And you know, coming in, Cooney's supposed to be a lights-out shooter, and he can shoot it when he's, you know, sometimes, I guess. I don't know. But Patterson was supposed to be a great shooter. You know what I mean? Then B.J. Johnson.
B.J. Johnson was supposed to be
These guys
a really
were supposed
good shooter.
To be, you know, in high school they made them. They obviously, you know, they had a reputation for some reason as being shooters.
You think a lot of us fans just don't realize the speed?
Oh, no doubt about it.
The players and the defenders, and
you know, like you say, when you know, I know I can make a wide open three, but you know, but it's a you know, you got to get it off. You got to get it. You're feeling it. You got
25,000,
25,000 people. It's a different ball game, no doubt about it. But there's times where Patterson and Cooney are getting wide open shots. They got to make, you know, those are the shots you got to make. You know, Cooney hit some really tough shots in the Michigan game, but he'll miss the easy ones. And, you know, those are ones that.
But they load up on Cooney because nobody else has demonstrated an ability to shoot any, you know,
another
any
thing I noticed. Joseph misses him a lot, too, I think. When he does get open, like if they get out running, Cooney's spotting up, especially after he's hit one or two. You got to get him that ball. Yeah. And he's trying to lob it and do all this. You know, when Cooney's open, give it to him because let's see what happens. I'd rather have him shooting a three than, you know, than Joseph trying to lob it to somebody, basically.
You know, speaking of Cooney, one thing I kind of noticed this St. John's game when they had the scuffle underneath with McCullough, Cooney was really – taking charge of the situation, breaking people up, and then they go over to the bench, and he grabs McCullough, and he pointed up at the scoreboard, and as if to say, look how close that game is. Don't get yourself, you know, a foul.
Show some leadership.
Yeah, and really, I think that's what this team needs, because you historically don't get that type of leadership from, like, a senior center type of guy, you know? Mm-hmm. It's usually you want that out of a guard. It's obviously not Chris Joseph's team.
I know, and I think that's – I think Cooney does try to lead. It's tough when, you know, you got 2 points.
Yeah, they might listen to him more if he makes 4 threes in a row.
Right. Good you know, point. He did. He did a nice job of stepping in, and I saw him grab a hold of McCullough and all that. But, you know, he's not their point guard. You know, usually, typically it's a point guard or a senior.
Even like a guy like Binajay could be that guy, which kind of, I guess, leads us to question three. And Binajay, I just can't wrap my head around him. What is he? The question is, how should Boeheim be using Binajay? But I guess the question might be more of, who is Mike Binajay? Is he that McDonald's All-American who's going to be, you know, one of our top two or three scorers and, you know, in a team leader? Or is he going to be, you know, just a role player throughout his career with us? Because right now, he's borderline role player.
Yeah, no, I think he's a role player. I think he's a Josh Pace, you know, at best. I don't think he's great at anything. I think he should be the starting point guard.
I thought last night he played well.
Yeah, he's had some moments.
He also
had some really
top
bad
plays
moments
for getting his shot rejected on ESPN this.
Yeah, which
this
I think you got to know who's in there when you go in there like that. And what might have been a better move would be a double clutch layup. But you know, as you say, it happened so fast. And
I would think that
tried to do those spectacular dunks like 5 times this year. I think he's 1 for 5.
I would take that G, either pronounce his name differently or take that G off his last name, and that would change
you
his
think
whole
that,
outlook. That might solve part of his problem.
What do you think about starting him at point guard?
You know,
let Joseph come off the bench. He's struggling right now, and you know, he sat out, I don't know, last 10 minutes last night, I think.
I don't know.
And I kind of liked if Patterson would make a shot, but when you have Cooney and Patterson, you got good size up front.
And Binajay up front.
Or Binajay in the back, playing him in the back, and then play Cooney and Patterson up front.
But what about, you say Binajay at the point? That's intriguing. That makes him really big in the zone.
Yeah.
I don't know how I'd feel about Binajay handling pressure consistently. I don't know if he's that good a ball handler, but
I'm saying
Joseph isn't either.
Point guard offensively, down low on defense.
Play
Patterson and Cooney with McCullough and Christmas.
Well, you go Roberson down low. Actually, this is getting to a topic I got later where we're going to talk about what our rotation would be, because in a situation like this with 3 losses, I think it's time to maybe switch things up a little bit after we've seen what everybody can do. Dave, you know, what's your overall take on Mike Binajay besides dropping the G?
Well, he's had flashes. And even in the loss last year in the tournament, he was one of the players that I thought played pretty well, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
And Boeheim says the guy is loaded with talent, but he hasn't been playing well. So hopefully his head's in the right place. And, you know, he had that year off. This should be his coming out year, I would think, to really pull forward. But he's a role player, but an important role player. I don't know about the point. It's something I never thought about before. But
played a decent week in the two losses. He was 3-for-5 shooting against Michigan, 10 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. Also 3 turnovers, 2 steals. Against St. John's, he was 6-for-10 shooting, 1-for-3 from beyond the arc. He had 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 turnovers, 5 fouls, and 13 points. So, again, those are role player type of numbers. I like the rebounds and assists. That's kind of nice, but they're not McDonald's All-American in his third year in college, you know, type of numbers. So, you know, I guess
why did he leave Duke anyway? He just wasn't getting the playing time. He didn't like it. You guys don't know
that. I think
that.
A lot of it was playing time.
Yeah,
you know?
He didn't play at all as a freshman. A couple minutes.
And I don't really know anything beyond that other than the fact that, you know, maybe Mike Coach K whiffed on this one and he had so much more talent coming in that, you know, next thing you know, he sends him off to Syracuse and maybe know in the back of his head he's not as good. But, look, he's good.
We don't know if in the back, you know, Krzyzewski and Boeheim, when they're not playing against each other, are very close.
Mm-hmm.
And you might have even said, this guy won't play for us, Coach, but I think he can help somebody. You don't know.
Yeah, well. Hey, question 4. The ACC really took a beating at the Big Ten. I mean, it's embarrassing. The type of stuff I used to just relish when we were in the Big East. And to be honest with you, even now with Syracuse and the ACC, I still kind of say, you know, like, yeah, go Big Ten. Maybe not go Big Ten, but it didn't hurt like it would be if it was the Big East. But where does the conference stack up nationwide against these other conferences? Because this is important when, you know, we're obviously looking like a bubble team so far. And so conference strength of schedule and all that's going to matter. And top to bottom, the ACC just got owned by the Big Ten. And I think the same may have been true if it was against the Pac-10, the Big East, the Big 12, maybe even the SEC.
I think, you know, 1-8, I think they're as good as any conference in the country. But the bottom end of the ACC is bad. You know, when you start getting the Wake Forest, Virginia Tech. Yeah, you know, and obviously Duke's, you know, one of the best teams in the country. Louisville's the top five. We got ACC's could have 3 teams in the top 5 this week with Virginia, Louisville, Duke.
It's traditionally been the ACC way.
Yeah.
A couple teams in the top 5, nobody else.
And, you know, and Carolina's been down lately, and they're supposed to be better this year, but they got a couple early season losses. They lost to an Iowa team that Syracuse beat. So,
which was good, but then Michigan loses to New Jersey Institute of Technology.
And that's, you know, you look at some of the losses. Every conference has teams, you know. Michigan was a ranked team and, you know, maybe supposed to be one of the better teams in the Big Ten, obviously, and they get beat by a team
NJIT.
I never heard of. And, you know.
Don't forget the Yaleys.
Yale beat UConn, yeah, so, which is always nice.
You never know. We don't have – I mean, that's a good thing. We don't have a terrible loss in our – you know, St. John's isn't a horrible loss. Obviously, at Michigan's acceptable.
Well, I think the St. John's loss is a very bad loss because of the Michigan loss. Because most fans watching the Syracuse loss of Michigan were at least encouraged by what a good game it was for a while. And, you know, the turnovers were bad, but, boy, they looked like a up-and-coming team.
If not for mistakes by our freshmen in that game late, we may have won.
Oh,
and you can accept freshman mistakes this early in the season.
2 missed one-on-ones by Michigan, and we have 3 opportunities, and we don't get a shot off.
Yep.
But that's what – the St. John's team is pretty decent. And
no doubt.
Worked
best
the ball,
shot blocker
but,
in the country.
Tough loss after losing on the road to Michigan. But the conference, when you asked that question, I don't know if anyone else right in my mind goes, well, geez, you get thinking about this is a big day in college football.
Yeah.
In the Big Ten in football, even though Ohio State got the berth, is considered terrible. In the ACC, in spite of Florida State not getting much respect.
Yeah.
But
I don't think they deserve it in football.
I think when it all pans out, though, the ACC will be well represented as the tournament advances with those top-tier teams.
6 teams, 7 teams in the dance from the ACC?
I'm going to say
I hope
6.
So.
6?
I
yeah,
hope
the
so,
more the better for us.
Based on the next question.
Right, which is question 5. Where are we going to finish in the ACC this year?
I'll tackle it first and just throw out a number 6th. because I think we were picked fourth or fifth. And I think some of that always goes to the tradition and Boeheim's status. And so far, we have yet to demonstrate we're more than maybe slightly above 500.
Yeah, which I don't know, Virk, how you...
I agree with Dave, you know, somewhere, you know, six right now is not looking too bad, you know. You figure, you know, Louisville, Duke, Virginia.
Miami, maybe.
Miami, North Carolina. Then I think we're in there with Miami, NC State, Pitt. You know, I think we're in that group, and you want to be at the top end of that group, which puts you anywhere from 5 to 8, maybe.
Yeah, I'd like to think that we can contend for the title. I'd like to think this team's going to get better. But by the time we get to the ACC tournament, we're going to be really needing some quality wins because we don't have any yet. And unless we get one at Villanova, we're going to enter our conference season, you know, on the outside looking in, which means we're not only are going to have to avoid upsets against the likes of Wake Forest or Boston College or Georgia Tech, but we're going to have to beat Duke, we're going to have to beat Louisville. You know, we're going to have to win one or two of those games against these superior teams. And I think we got the talent to be that kind of team, but obviously we haven't learned how to close a game. And at the moment, it doesn't look like there's anything going to change in the near future with Joseph sitting the bench at the end. And, you know, and really – whiffing on two opportunities to pick up two quality wins in the last 2-3 minutes of the last two games. I guess that's what's frustrating. We're on the outside looking in, but we showed at the Michigan game and by beating Iowa, which may be a quality win, and in the St. John's game that this team can play. The talent's there and the ability's there, but they're missing those that one intangible of a winning team. Whether it's confidence or knowing, you know, who to go to at the end of the game, or just general nerves. Because Saturday in the Dome, I guarantee you that Joseph and McCullough had never seen anything like that with the atmosphere and the crowd. That's why they came to Syracuse, and I think McCullough rose to the occasion. I don't think Joseph did.
Yeah, and again, you know, Ennis was an exceptional playmaker, and Syracuse went so many, was it 25 in a row before they finally lost last year?
Yep.
Yeah.
And the talent is so rich out there that, Boeheim talks about getting these players and developing them, and so let's hope that occurs.
Yeah, they're going to have to develop. They're going to have to get better, no doubt. If they can't go play like this all season, or we certainly aren't going to be in the top of the ACC or in the NCAA tournament. So, looking ahead at the schedule ahead, they don't play for a while now, which I suppose is a good thing. Next game Sunday versus Louisiana Tech in the Dome. That's a 4 o'clock game on ESPNU. Then we come back next Sunday night, just hours after that one ends, at 10 o'clock for our live edition of the Upstate Orange podcast. And then the big one the following Saturday at Villanova, December 20th, 1 o'clock on Fox. Maybe Rafferty will call that game. But so really, after a bad week of losing two, we really don't play too much over the next couple weeks, a couple times. Then it picks up again on the 22nd against Colgate, 7 p.m. on ESPNU. 3 days after Christmas on the 28th, we host Long Beach State for a 2 o'clock tilt. And then Cornell on New Year's Eve before we get into the ACC season. Two road games to start our conference slate. January 3rd at Virginia Tech, and then January 7th against Georgia Tech. So we're going to step aside for about 60 seconds, hear from the great sponsors that make this show possible. But when we come back, I'll fill in for Brad with this week's Orange Trivia on another edition of Connor's Corner.
Guidance and partnership through every step of the journey. Welcome to Generations Bank.
The Newark Pilots. See tomorrow's Major League stars today. For more information, go to NewarkPilots.com.
Call the Finger Lakes Personal Injury Hotline at 315-568-0911. That's 315-568-0911. Made, Maris, and Ricky, your hometown personal injury attorneys.
And welcome back to the Upstate Orange Podcast on FingerLakes1.tv and YouTube. You can subscribe to our feed on iTunes or Stitcher.com, or subscribe to our channel at FingerLakes1.com on YouTube. And every Sunday night, we'll drop right into your feed. So, the professor, off for a week. Usually he brings the trivia to the show. In his absence, I think I got some decent trivia here tonight. Part one of the trivia is almost impossible unless you were really paying attention to the telecast of the game on Saturday. But part two might get interesting. Part one, when was the last time we lost to St. John's?
9 years ago.
It was
close.
I think it was. This is more my memory from what I read, not from what I remember. I think it was 1999.
Nope, the year was 2007. January 21st, 2007, we lost at St. John's, 64-60. And my trivia question is, who started that game for Syracuse?
What year?
2007.
Jeez.
This in a little hint. This is probably one of my least favorite Syracuse teams in the last 30 years.
So that would have been the year after McNamara graduated?
2007.
Was that Terrence? Was it Roberts? What was his
Terrence
last name?
Terrence Roberts, yep. He was a power forward.
Watkins.
So Watkins was the center.
Yeah, those two guys went together. Would that be Andy Routins?
Andy Routins was a freshman, I believe, on that team, maybe a sophomore. No, he's a freshman. He never played with GMAC.
That's before Flynn got there, though, right?
Correct. You got two more guys to get in this starting lineup. One should be easy, and another should be a little more difficult.
What they wasn't Shumpert, was it?
That
was,
oh, no, 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 no.
That was before.
Shumpert was 90s.
So
late 90s.
Yeah.
It's point guard would have been Josh Wright.
Correct. Good
Excellent.
Call. Good call.
Shooting guard.
Well, shooting guard was Rotwin. So
did he start as a freshman, though?
He was starter, yeah. I think he was a four-year starter.
See, I don't know.
He's listed. He started this game for whatever reason.
Okay.
And I guess it's a little bit of a trick question, but we're missing the small forward, which you guys really should be able to get, 2007.
He must have been the standout on the team.
Yeah.
Preston Shumpert.
Yeah, yeah, no.
That's way...
not Moton. That was
no,
earlier.
Geez,
no.
Dave.
You're well, getting, I don't have the years.
You're getting confused in your old age. Moton was there when I was in school in the early 90s.
This picture of Jim Boeheim on the schedule, how old does he look in that?
Hold up to 70. The camera there.
Yeah, he's
the small forward on this team was...
our producer knows it. Chime in.
Is it Demetrius Nichols?
Correct. Okay. Demetrius Nichols. And there's a voice of producer Jeremy Hunt. So, you're right. This was difficult.
He's had a pretty good career after college.
Nichols?
Yeah. I think he's in prison.
Really?
No, you're thinking about Damone Brown.
Oh, that's right. They're both D-Nick. From Buffalo, aren't they?
Yeah, D-Nick, I think, actually hung around. He had a tryout with the Bulls. Probably, I don't know where he's playing. But the interesting thing about that, and the reason I think it was tough, is because the leading scorer in that game was Devendorf with 23, but he didn't start.
See, I think Devendorf started most of the year, and Routins came off the bench.
Could have been. Paul Harris was on that team, too, with 12 rebounds.
I was rebounds. Thinking Harris.
The 1 year Harris right. was there before Flynn.
Because I don't think Routins started until his senior year, until Devendorf left.
I
would think
at
he
least
started
2 years.
With Devendorf, yeah. He was...
Where? He played small forward?
He had such great
he
heart,
probably
too,
did.
By the way.
I don't think so.
Well, we actually didn't play St. John's in 2001, too, if you can believe that. It's kind of strange. But next question is, I'll tell you, the time we lost before that to St. John's was 2000. So we lost to them this year, 7 years ago, 2007, 7 years ago, 2000, 76-75 at St. John's. We were ranked 9 at the time. Who was the starting lineup on that team?
What year? 2000?
2000, and I'll let you tell you right now, Damone Brown was on that team, and he was a starter.
Ryan Blackwell.
Good call.
The geez, the center there who
not Wallace.
No, with the dreadlocks.
He's a poet. He was also a Washington Wizard.
I can't think of his name. What is it?
Come on, Dave. You know this guy. Played for the Washington Wizards.
It's not Paul Pierce.
A poet
Hart
laureate.
Was the point guard.
Good call there. You're right, Jason Hart. The shooting guard's the one that you're going to struggle with, although apparently you're struggling with the center, who is probably one of our best centers that we've had in the past 20 years.
Yeah, I just can't think of his name. Williams? Was Williams the two-guard?
Our producer's going to chime in on this
Go
one,
ahead,
too.
Jeremy.
It's Etan Thomas.
Correct.
Thomas.
Good
Etan
job.
Etan Thomas.
Good job.
Yes.
Williams? Was he the shooting
Deshaun
guard?
Williams? No, good guess, though. But this is, I'll give you a hint, this is a player who transferred. He transferred out west.
He transferred, he left Syracuse.
He left Syracuse, transferred out after his sophomore year, I believe. Jason Hart led the team with 18 points in this loss in 2000, by the way.
Man.
He actually landed at San Diego State, where he had a pretty good final couple years.
I can't think of him.
Any last guesses before
no
I get
idea.
It? Tony Bland. Oh, our producer got it late. He's getting all these. But, yeah, Tony Bland.
I don't even remember him.
I like Tony Bland quite a bit, and he did do pretty well at San Diego State. Sorry to see him go. Okay, guys, those were both road losses. When was the last time before Saturday that Syracuse lost to St. John's at home? And this is why I can stomach a loss to St. John's. First of all, I have a little bit of old compassion for the old Big East schools. You know, I'm always going to kind of like them. And that game on Saturday had a Big East feel, and there was even a fight, and I love it. So good for St. John's. You know, good for Steve Lavin, who struggled. You know, we'll let St. John's beat us once every 7 years.
Well, that wasn't 99, was it?
Correct, it was, Dave. That's a really good job.
Well, I had read a little stuff, and I... Just certain
that was,
things
yeah.
connected. I was
yeah, that was
the other one.
January 27th, 1999, yeah. Lost at the Dome to St. John's, 75-70. We were ranked 17th at the time. And who was the starting lineup on that team? That was just 1 year earlier. So, you know, I'll give you Hart, Thomas, and Blackwell, and Brown. There was one more player. Hart led the team that game, too, with 24 points. There was one more player in that starting lineup. He was a guard. He was actually, this one's going to be real tough because he was a shooting guard in this starting lineup, but ended up ultimately being a starting guard.
Point guard? He ended up being a point guard?
Oh, yeah, ended up being a point guard. Mm. And ended up on the Syracuse staff eventually for a while. He's not there anymore.
Marty Head.
No, and don't say Greg Monroe next.
Well, I'll give you a little sidebar, though. The first game, Syracuse game I ever attended was in the mid-70s at the Dome, and it was Manly, and the only time I was ever there for a game, and it was St. John's.
I was at Manly for a game against Seton Hall that Bill Rafferty coached, and Marty had played in that game.
I sat next to Jake Krauthammel, which is another story.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. Interesting story for off the air.
It's an off-the-air story, huh?
Well, I don't know if I want to spend a long time, as much time as it might take to get into it.
How about back on topic here? How about Michael Brown?
No, good guess. Wait. I think he was in the 80s, though. Yeah. Yeah, wasn't he in the 80s?
1999, shooting, or point guard, you said?
He was a shoot. He started shooting guard this game because, obviously, Hart was the point guard, but then eventually would man the point for Syracuse. Hmm. For I think maybe only one season.
Wait, 99. Oh, that's.
I'm stumping everybody. I wonder if any of our listeners got it right now.
I don't know.
Dave Eichenhofer could call in with that. He's a big time fan.
We could probably open it up to Twitter. We could take tweets. But yeah, it was Alan Griffin, guys. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. So.
I do not remember him. You guys all remember him.
You don't remember Alan Griffin?
Not really.
He was on the coaching staff for a little while.
Huh.
Hmm.
Now that you're saying it, I do.
He actually got into a little incident with, it's rumored that he had sex with one of the other players' girlfriends because he was a young assistant. So when he was on, and, you know, again, only rumors, but by coincidence, he wasn't on the staff anymore, the, you know, following year. So So there you go. Hopefully when Brad checks this out, he thinks I did a pretty good job with the trivia.
You did.
It's tough. You know, we've been doing this now for 3-4 years and a lot of trivia questions. How many trivia questions can you have about Syracuse?
Yeah.
But a little St. John's Syracuse trivia there and some names from the past like Tony Bland. Let's move on to the list segment. And we got into this a little bit, but, you know, I was thinking to myself, you know, what we have going on here isn't working. What can we do to shake it up? And I guess what I want to know from you guys is, if you were the coach, what would you change about the rotation, the starting lineup, the scheme? And, Virk, you immediately said, you brought up Michael Benajay at points at Joseph and bring Joseph off the bench. I kind of like that. What else would
just,
you do?
Just, you know, maybe it takes some pressure off of Joseph, you know, let him sit for a little bit. And, you know, Benajay's got experience. I think he handles the point fine. And it brings that actually a little bit of extra length in there. And, you know, maybe start Benajay at point, Cooney and B.J. Johnson, something different. You know, they need to get some scoring on the floor. I don't think Roberson provides that scoring for him. He hasn't yet. I mean, none of these guys have, but, you know, either a B.J. Johnson or Patterson, somebody's got to step up between Roberson, Johnson, and Patterson, obviously. Somebody's got to step up and be able to put some points out there. But I do like the idea of, you know, maybe going a little bit more, get a little bit more athletic, and maybe play a little bit more up-tempo, press a little bit more. I don't know if that fits Benajay at the point necessarily, but, you know, just change something up. Change the way the game's being played, because our half-court, we're getting nothing in transition. Our half-court offense is struggling. Defense hasn't been that great. You know, maybe this help changes something.
Hey, Dave, what would you do?
I listened to Matt. I'll defer to him and Coach Boeheim. I really don't know. But is Benajay, has he started most of the year?
No, he got his first start Saturday.
That's what I thought.
That was his first start.
And based on his performance, I liked seeing him out there. That's the one thing. And the pressing is fine to see some of that. But Boeheim, again, is never has that, you know, it's a primarily a seven-person rotation with an eighth guy who gets a few minutes. And if something doesn't click, maybe alter that
stretch out the bench a little bit.
Yeah, because nobody is really distinguishing themselves. So you might as well give a bunch of guys a shot, and then you can afford to press more.
Yeah, I kind of agree with both of you guys, and I really kind of like the idea of Benajay at point because, you know, we kind of went into the season thinking it's Joseph or bust. Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. If he may be more comfortable coming off the bench.
Or Christian White.
Like, you know, why not? We got all these athletes. Not that Christian White's not a good athlete, but, you know, maybe give him some minutes, see if he can just mix something up. I like playing all these guys a little more because I think they'll get a little more comfortable as we go, and not just, you know, 3 minutes this game for Johnson and then 3 minutes this game for Patterson. I'm saying, you know, let them know that every night they're getting 12 minutes, you know, one way or another.
And I think those guys, Johnson and Patterson and Roberson, feel like, you know, they shoot and miss, they're coming out. Like, they're just, you know, although Patterson got extended time Saturday night and didn't do a whole lot with it. You know, he hit one three and, you know, then he had some nice looks and couldn't knock him down.
You know, the one other thing that I'd do is I would just make a point to get the ball to McCullough more. You know, you got Christmas and McCullough, I think, seem to be the two most reliable offensive options. You know, go to them. Oh, time and time again. You know, don't.
They're making the effort, I think. You know, they're looking inside a lot this year. And
do we have to shoot the three? Do we even have to shoot threes? I mean, obviously we do if we want to make any type of noise in the postseason. You're going to have to make some three pointers. But at this point, maybe scale back the shots and go pound it more inside with McCullough. Like, I like McCullough shooting a 16 footer or a 14 footer better than I like any of our guys shooting threes.
That's a good point. And even Cooney had a pull-up jumper about 3 feet inside the arc.
I think we are going inside more than ever. Really making a concerted effort to do it. The problem is, you know, they're obviously not leaving Cooney open. You don't got to guard Joseph. I mean, when he's wide open at 3-point line, do you think it's going in? I'm surprised when it goes in. You know, which isn't a good way to feel. And, you know, the other guys are obviously not making shots either. So it's hard to go inside all the time when there's
double teams, and, you know, they're packing it in.
You know, Boeheim, I heard him in an extended interview in the off season, and he knows what to say. Obviously, he's been around a long time, but he sounded so sincere. He said Christmas is going to be the most improved player in the conference. He was really pleased with him, and he sounded very confident. I think he likes the composition of the team, but obviously his and their work is still cut out for him.
And I agree with, you know, Christmas has been phenomenal, more, I think, than we probably expected.
And how nice he would have looked alongside Jeremy Grant down in that D-League right now, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, man. Yeah, that's the reality of the game. You know, McCullough's going to be gone next year, let's face it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not pushing him out the door, but, you know, once the scouts say he's going to be top 15, you know, he's gone. And part of that's probably in his head right now.
I also heard, not to go too far off track, but talking about these freshmen, Kentucky, the one color analyst on the game the other day was saying, these guys are going to run the table. They're not going to lose a game the whole season.
Maybe.
And they got the two starting fives, right?
Yeah, maybe they can let us have one of their seconds. Okay, I'm not going to get back down on these guys. I really think that with the pieces that we need to be successful are all there. It's just, you know, a team that needs to find itself. We've really been spoiled.
Yes.
You know, over the past few years. And we come to expect, you know, to be top five every single year. And I think for the most part we are and we will, especially with the recruits we have coming in. But we're not the only program to have issues like this every now and then. I mean, North Carolina seems to have issues like this ever since they won that national championship, but it seems like they're nowhere to be found in, you know, the rankings once you get into the season. So,
I mean, the expectations run so high. I mean, even we're talking for this time of year, last night wasn't a bad day. Well, it was a miserable day.
Yeah, weather.
But then and there are 25,000 people that show up for a non-conference game against an old rival.
Yeah, and it delivered on the feel in the atmosphere.
It did.
So, yep. All right, guys, coming up here on 10:46 Eastern Standard Time on a Sunday night, it's time for Two for the Road. And leading into that comment about the old Big East rival, I'm wondering if you guys still root for the Big East teams. Obviously not when they're playing Syracuse, but, you know, I find myself, maybe it's just force of habit, but I'm still rooting for out-of-conference Villanova, St. John's, even Georgetown, you know, out-of-conference.
I do, just because it's teams I know, you know, yeah. Jay Wright, coaches you know, you see him on TV a lot up here, on our, you know, on the Northern Television, you know, if you turn on Sports Channel New York, you catch these guys playing a lot.
There's still guys on UConn, those teams that yeah. we were in our conference.
You know, they're teams we grew up watching, teams you become accustomed to watching, either kind of have a dislike or maybe a likeness for some of them even. You
but
know
an
I mean?
Interest.
Yeah, an interest in them.
Yep.
Where Virginia Tech or Wake Forest, I still don't follow them at all. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's sad to say, but, you know, Providence is on, I might watch them. Or, you know what I mean? It's,
I agree.
I still have that affiliation, no doubt.
The Northeastern schools is what we're talking
sure.
about, and the schools we talk about not liking are Southern schools, and then Virginia Tech's right on that border, but they're in a Southern Conference now, as we are, I suppose. Dave,
well,
you
Coach Boeheim, in that couple of those interview segments when they had the four coaches, I think Jay Billis was the interviewer.
Yep.
He said, you know, the difficulty leaving the Big East, he said, but now there are seven former members of the Big East
yeah.
in the ACC. So it's a little, it has a different feel for him than the first thought of it did. So, okay, you know, will I ever root for Georgetown? Mm, but an interest, that's a good yeah. word.
I tell you.
You do root for the East against
yeah,
other,
the ACC is now half Big East, although you got to, you know, if I could take Miami and Virginia Tech out and maybe slide Villanova and even like a Providence in, you know, I think I would like it much better. But yeah, it's more of a merger. Unfortunately, we don't get to take any of our history. You know, it's under the ACC name. And honestly, guys, I don't like the way that the conference is run. I mean, for supposedly one of the big five power conferences in this new, you know, alignment of college athletics, the ACC has been terrible over the last 10 years, other than grabbing championships because of one team. But that used to be the knock on Big East football. It was Miami and nobody else. Well, you know, I'm looking at ACC football, and it's Florida State and nobody else. And even Florida State's overrated. Amazing they keep winning these games, and amazing that Winston hasn't, you know, lost in his college career, but the same thing. And now to watch the basketball unfold like the Big Ten Challenge and lose all these games and see that even – like, it was always top-heavy. When we were in the Big East, we said to ourselves, well, you know, the ACC's got Duke and North Carolina and nobody else. Well, guess what? They added Syracuse, Pittsburgh, Louisville.
Yes.
All traditional top 10
yes.
teams. And guess what? It's the same thing. Now it's – you know, Virginia's is showing up this year. And I think, you know, a couple years ago it was Miami – or maybe last year they were.
It was Duke, Carolina, and then a random NC State team or Wake
Virginia
Forest.
Might be maybe. Around for a while, too, given what I heard and read and observed from their coach.
But so far this year, it's the same thing. Top heavy, and unfortunately, we're not one of the top heavy ones. But that was what expected when we came over with Louisville and Pittsburgh was, okay, now the ACC is not going to be top heavy. We're going to have four or five teams consistently in the top 15 and 7 or 8 teams maybe even in the top 25, and just didn't happen. Same old ACC. And again, it's because you know, the conference tournament is going to be in Greensboro, and it's going to be in Washington, and then it's going to be in Brooklyn, which is good, but you know, just decisions like that, the way they even break up the conference, you know, for football into divisions. We got into this conference as a football program, and we haven't played Miami yet. And we haven't played Virginia Tech yet. We've been in the conference for 2 years.
That's
I don't like the way they run the conference. I would actually, what I would like to see, it'll never happen, though, is let's divide that conference in half right about that Virginia State line. Let's have the North and the South. Then you have natural rivalries.
You would intensify some of those rivalries.
Yeah, those Southern teams would never want to lose, especially in football, to the winner of the Northern Division. And I just think it would naturally would be good, but you know why it doesn't happen? That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about with why the ACC just can't seem to elevate itself to where it should be for the quality of the teams that compete in it. So I guess kind of going off on a tangent there.
Pretty well thought out, though, Jim.
I think about these things quite a bit, Dave. I do.
I'm still thinking football a lot, though, too. So
yeah, it's you know, and I guess a lot of these thoughts were formed as we were threatened by the ACC poaching our teams over the years. You know, I really started to, some people would say, oh, it would be great, we'll go to the ACC. I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, I couldn't imagine.
Well, all you have to do is watch that.
The Requiem for a Big East, yeah.
Yep.
All right, guys.
But the other thing is the one and done.
Yeah.
You know, that's changed a lot throughout college basketball throughout the country.
Well, I think that's why North Carolina doesn't do so well. I don't think Roy Williams is very good at coaching in this era with these types of players. Mm-hmm. I think he was better when he was at Kansas. He always had, you know, 3 or 4 four-year guys. You know, even guys like Rafe LaFrench, you know, he was there for and so then, you know, when they lose, Roy Williams would cry. Now he doesn't cry anymore because he doesn't even know the kids as much, you know. I don't know. So, question number 2, and this is the big one before we get out of here. Are we going to the NCAA tournament this year or not? Are we going to the NIT? Dave, you take this one.
If the season ended today, about being a Syracuse fan, I'll pay some homage to Coach Boeheim that he gets enough out of these kids to start winning a few close games, improvement occurs, and they squeak in, you know, as maybe an 8 or a 9 seed.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Virk,
right now it's up in the air.
It's tentative.
You know, obviously a lot of games to be played, you know, and, you know, like we talked about earlier, a lot of, you know, Michigan just, you know, a lot of teams are losing some games. We definitely got to win, obviously, the games we should. And, which, you know, St. John's at home was kind of a must-win.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think we're borderline right now.
We don't have any bad losses, really. Who knows how that Cal loss will eventually play out. But, it's going to come down to winning games.
It's easy to discount one or two of those, but all three so early.
And don't forget the big one at Villanova. Villanova's undefeated. We come out of there with a win, I say we're back on the good side of the bubble. If we come out of there with a loss, I think we are firmly on the outside of the bubble, needing to probably finish maybe even top five to get the berth. But it's a long way away. I just, we've had those seasons where you sit there on Selection Sunday. It's probably been, over the past 30 years, maybe four or five times where you sit there and you just don't know. We're right there. And almost every time that's happened to Syracuse, we don't get the bid.
Correct.
So I have never felt comfortable unless we are, firmly in as a top five or six seed. And I don't want to sit there on Selection Sunday this year hoping, keeping my fingers crossed, waiting that they call the Cuse. So, but
it would be actually really nice to be not so highly touted, get in and make some noise that way.
A little less pressure.
Instead of having a Dayton do to us, it would be nice if we did that to somebody else.
Yeah, either way, if we can win, get in the tournament, win six games, that's fine by me. I don't care what the seed is, but hey, looking at this here, this was the Syracuse-North Carolina game, and you see Syracuse is just absolutely killing North Carolina in the Dome last year, and it seems like we had never ridden higher than the past few years leading up to this point. And then about a couple weeks later, after Ennis hits that shot against Pittsburgh, it kind of went south, and it hasn't been back yet. So maybe this year be the opposite. Maybe we've gotten about to our low point now. Maybe we'll win at Villanova. Maybe we'll win the ACC. We got the tools. Let's just hope that something out there changes. So, fellas, any parting shots before we put a wrap on this thing? Any Louisiana Tech game predictions?
Well, I want to make sure, hats off, I took my good buddy and one of my golfing friends, former middleweight champion of the world, Rocky Graziano.
Oh, nice.
He had never been to the Dome before.
Are you kidding me?
And he was totally into the whole thing. And we had a great night, except, of course, for the disappointing finish.
Yeah. So you took Rocky up to the Dome, and he'd never been there.
Never had been before. Great guy. Very good golfer, by the way.
And, absolutely.
He was into it all the way.
Yeah, good. How about you, Virk? Any parting shots?
Go Cuse.
Yeah,
some
please.
Threes.
Come on.
Let's make some threes.
Make some shots.
Hopefully I get in here again before the holiday, but to everyone, especially you guys and your families, and my brand-new two-month-old granddaughter.
Yep, congratulations,
as well.
Dave. Yeah. And we'll see you on Finger Lakes One TV Friday night at the Minders-Waterloo doubleheader.
I'll be talking about the Sacramento Kings a little bit, too.
Oh, that's what every Minders fan wants to hear.
That's right. Well, my son, of course, is working with the Sacramento Kings.
By the way, they wore the Rochester jerseys
yes,
this week, which is
it.
Pretty cool.
Yes.
The old Rochester Royals jerseys,
can
right?
Can you name – that'd be a good trivia question. Can you name – how many Rochester Royals can you name?
Well, Dave, that would probably be a good question for you and your contemporaries from your era.
You should be able to get a
– Elgin Baylor.
No?
Bob McAdoo.
You got to go back farther.
Dolph Shays. Or no, he was the Syracuse Nats.
Right. Yeah. Well, Al Survey, who used to have a basketball camp in the Adirondacks. Here's a name I think Virk will know. Bobby Wanzer.
I've heard it before.
He went on
to
coach at St. John Fisher after his playing career. Yep. Arnie Risen was another one. This is before my time, too.
Okay, just making
it's
that
just
clear.
Just a little trivia.
Right, gotcha. Yeah. That is good.
Bob Davies was another one. Those are the four I can recall.
He was my industrial arts teacher in high school, I think, wasn't he? All right, guys. Thanks for joining us on the Upstate Orange Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or via RSS. We'll see you next Sunday night at 10 p.m. For Matt Verkey and Dave Barnick, I'm Jim Sinicropi. Let's go Orange!